Okay, let's get the Aging Well Together show started. I'm always giggling because I never know what music or what weird sounds are going to come in. For those of us, those of you listening to our podcast, you missed it. Those of you listening to us live, that was a really funny, there was really interesting music. And then this guy, hey, I'm Cooter. Welcome the community radio and listening to it. It was just the funniest thing. Okay. Well, let's get ready to jump into our show. I am so excited. We have such an informative show for you today. It is all about understanding Parkinson's disease. We missed highlighting Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month in April because that's when our studio was being moved around. But it is too important a topic that we've really wanted to have on the show that we didn't want to wait until next April. So I'm so excited that Maggie Ivancy is joining us from UNC Chapel Hill's Movement Disorders Center. We're going to ask her lots of questions. I am so looking forward to all we'll learn together. But before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carbro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday from 2 to 3 on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org, which is, I know how many of us listen to the program. That's how I listen to it often, unless I'm in that 1 mile radius around the Carbro where I can catch it on my radio in the car. But the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors, they are expert guests on our show. Actually, they connected me with our expert guest on our show today. And each week, Marilyn over at Orange County posts our previous shows on Orange County's website. So if you want to catch up on any of our past shows, and we've numbered them, this is show 82. I can't believe it. So you can listen to 81 previous episodes. This one should be up in the next few days. Or if you want to find a range of local Orange County aging resources, you can go to the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, and I'll slow down so you can get your pens out and paper, www.orangecountync.gov/aging, orangecountync.gov/aging. As we always say, don't forget that NC or you're going to end up in Orange County, California on your web search. So if you have any questions about local resources, you can also call the Orange County Department on Aging, and their number is 919-968-2070. And if you have any questions about our shows or want to suggest a topic or person or organization, please feel free to email me. I am working hard now putting together our fall programming, working on our September and October shows, and you can email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. It's all one smushed word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. And a shout out to the Carbro Bass Band. You always hear us love on them, the Robert Bradford Quintet. We used to call them the Robert Bradford Quartet, but they got another musician with them, Maggie smiling. And so the Robert Bradford Quintet allows us to use their great music for our opening. You just heard a few seconds, but you'll hear a lot more at the end of the show. And I'm super sad my fabulous co-host Alicia Reed is not with us today. Alicia, if you're listening, we love you. She is supporting a family member that's going through some health issues right now. And so, Alicia, our love is going out to you and your loved one, and we hope everyone is healthy and back with us next week, Alicia, and that your loved one is back home soon. Alicia is one of the extraordinary wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging, and she's a dedicated community volunteer, and she is the hostess of the radio. Can we say hostess? She is the host of the radio program Right After Hours, Afternoon Talk with Alicia. Hopefully, there'll be a nice previous recording, encore recording, as they call it, right after our show. But excited for Alicia being back with us. soon. And as for me, I am Heather Altman. I'm your host. I've spent over 25 years, and next year it's going to be 30 years. So really, I need to just say almost 30 years working in aging services and supports in our community. I help older adults and their families connect with resources. I'm a caregiver for older family members. And at 54, I am focusing on my own changing needs. So I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, now I'm super excited to go into this topic this week of Parkinson's disease. I hear so much about it and see so much about it, and I've wanted to learn more. I'm really excited. We have Maggie Ivansi. She has a fun last name. And so we're like, and Maggie is the center coordinator and clinical social worker at UNC Chapel Hill's Movement Disorder Center. She specializes in supporting people with Parkinson's disease. And this is a really big word. She's going to have to help me say this. Atypical Parkinsonism?
Parkinsonism. Yes.
That's going to be one of the first questions.
Talk about that.
Going to be defining that for us. Parkinsonism. I like the word, though. I have a feeling I'm going to be sad for what it represents, but right. It is kind of a cool word that rolls off the tongue in a really fun way. Prior to Maggie's role with UNC Movement Disorders Clinic, she worked as a hospice social worker. I am so excited to have her here. First time on the Aging Well Together show. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you so much, Heather. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, and not only are you great for what you do, and I didn't realize before that you worked at hospice, which I adore all social workers, but those that work in the hospice space have a special place in my heart, even before my own mother passed away in a hospice community. But just, I know you're good people, and you have been so flexible, because we've had to move this show at least once, if not twice, because it was like, the studio's not ready yet. And so anyway, Maggie, welcome.
Thank you.
We're going to get into Parkinson's disease. And Parkinsonism.
And Parkinsonism.
I'm really going to enjoy that word. But as always, we want to know a little about you. We always want to know about our guests. Tell us about you, where you're from, how you got interested in social work, how you got into movement disorders. I promise we'll give a few minutes by the end of the show on Parkinson's disease, but I'm fascinated by you.
So, my name's Maggie Ivansi. I grew up born and raised in North Carolina, the only family member in my family, immediate family, born and raised in North Carolina.
Nice. So, my girls can say that, but clearly I was not born and raised here. Yes.
Yeah, proud North Carolinian, raised in the foothills of North Carolina.
I was going to say your accent, it's not around here. It's got to be somewhere else. Okay.
Right. And, my parents aren't from North Carolina either, so didn't grow up around that accent. But the foothills of North Carolina, grew up there, and then went to school in UNCW at the coast.
Nice.
And then transferred to UNC Chapel Hill. So I've spent time in all across the state.
You are such a Tar Heel.
I'm a Tar Heel.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. And then how did you decide to do, what did you do undergrad? Did you do social work undergrad, or what did you do?
Great question.
A helping profession undergrad?
Well, I was a music major.
Oh, my gosh. Vocal. I almost just said, or were you something like a music major? Because I did not do enough stalking on you to know that. So I almost was like, or were you like a music major undergrad?
Yeah. So I was vocal performance. I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill with a BA in music.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then that clearly leads to the next question, which, how did you go from music to social work?
So I was raised by two people who work in the helping profession, a psychologist and a case manager. And so was always, around people who are helping people. And so then I go off to college and I'm going to be a musician. And I get to the end of my, music degree and I go, I'm probably going to use this to go to music therapy school, to help people.
Which is great. We've had music therapists on the show. I love music therapy. And hey, already, we're going to hit you up to come do a show at WCOM if you love music. But okay,
love it,
we're
love
performing.
Love it.
So, yeah. Wait, so go on.
Yeah. So took a few years off after school and thought, you know what? I want to leave music for my passion and not my work. And I want to pursue strictly, you know, the helping profession of social work. And I wasn't sure what that meant for me going into the degree. But once I got to UNC Chapel Hill's social work program, I discovered medical social work and said, oh, this is for me. This is where I want to be.
You get to define that for our listeners.
Yeah.
What does medical social work mean, and how does that differ from other types of social work?
So medical social work is where you get to work on an interdisciplinary team of other healthcare professionals to put together a care plan for whatever patient population that you're working with. So you get to ask about all of the kind of social determinants of health kind of questions, about anything related to their family history, anything related to their mood and mental health, and kind of share with not only the patient but the rest of the team how you can best support their health goals.
And that's why, did you go right into hospice? So medical social workers, this is a basic question, but clearly then generally work in medical settings,
yes.
Right? Like hospitals,
yes.
Or doctor's offices, or hospice
or
providers.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
So my two internships in school were both at Duke, and one mm-hmm. was in the mother-baby unit, and then the other one was with Duke Movement Disorders.
I'm seeing the through line. Easter egg in the movie, as we call it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And so one thing that I haven't shared yet about my background is when I was a child, my grandmother had Parkinson's disease.
Got it.
And in between my undergrad and graduate school journey, my uncle was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Interesting. So there's a real family connection.
That's
to
right.
This.
And then I had another uncle diagnosed with Parkinson's disease as well.
Okay.
So.
Not that this is your therapy or
right.
your genetic discussion, but how does that feel, having so much Parkinson's? Because you are, listeners, I'm not
yes.
sure if you can say, Maggie's a younger woman. I don't know how old she is, but she's younger, which would be probably much earlier than Parkinson's generally shows up, but I don't know. But how does it feel that, like, how? That's a lot in your family.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, both of my uncles married into my family, so
okay.
blood relation.
Okay.
Right. And we can, you know, there is some information out there right now. The Parkinson's Foundation has a big genetic study going on called PD generation, trying to find the causes of Parkinson's disease. So we don't know the cause of Parkinson's disease.
Okay,
we can kind of start with that. But we know that there have been 7 genes identified to having some sort of genetic component. But we're still figuring that out right now. There's still research to be done.
Okay, so that is so interesting, because we did just jump from
yes,
you into Parkinson's.
I know.
Which is, you know what, let's do it.
Because that's the through line.
That is the through line.
Yep.
I see that. And it's funny, when I looked at the questions we were going to talk about, I realized one of the questions I did not have is what causes it. So that you've already answered it,
but let's
take a step back then. So what we got your little bit of how you got your movement into movement disorders. But so let's do context first. What is Parkinson's disease?
So Parkinson's disease is a slowly progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects your dopamine producing neurons in the place of the brain called the substantia nigra. And
wow, I have studied brain issues around dementia. What is that part? I've never even heard that.
The substantia nigra, it's in the basal ganglia.
Okay, that will come from. All right.
Uh-huh. We won't get too deep into the science of this. that's where it occurs. And when you're looking at a person and they're lacking dopamine, because that's kind of what happens, is your dopamine supply diminishes.
And dopamine, that is I've been looking a lot into dopamine, because isn't dopamine part of like our happy and our reward system? Isn't that why I'm on my smartphone all the time? Because they keep saying you're getting your
getting dopamine fixes, right?
Yeah,
right,
and that's right. Okay. So,
well, dopamine in that part of your brain affects your motor symptoms. It's giving you the signals to your brain about how you should move. That's why the common symptoms related with Parkinson's is tremor, mm-hmm. slowness of movement, stiffness in the body, and issues with balance.
Interesting. But somehow that's also connected with the dopamine part of the reward. So
yeah.
This is where, you know what, listeners, I did this for you. Since many of you did not know, none of you knew we were going to be talking about Parkinson's today, I feel like I knew just a little bit, but I didn't research it. So listeners and I are all learning all at the same time. It's like I knew about the tremors and the movement mm-hmm, issues, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I knew that it was a neurodegenerative disease that is a slow progressing.
That's right.
Or a progressive disease, meaning it gets...
It continues to decline.
Decline. Mm-hmm. I was going to say worse. But this dopamine issue, that's the first I've heard of this. So is that, and now do we have dopamine that is different in the reward? The thing that makes us get the fix on the phone, is that somehow connected with tremors, or is that just different ways it works in the brain?
I think it's different ways it works in the brain.
Okay, yeah. So then we'll go back to how Parkinson's presents itself physically.
Yeah, physically.
Mm-hmm. Has a movement disorder component.
Yes.
I remember years ago, there was a gentleman at the retirement community where I used to work, and he looked like he was mad a lot, and I didn't know anything about Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And I thought he was like mad at me,
totally.
Or he just gave me no expression.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I had no idea there's a term for that.
Facial masking.
Facial masking. And that he had Parkinson's, and that his face was sort of frozen.
Yeah.
How would you describe what I was seeing?
The movements in your face diminish. It's that stiffness.
The stiffness.
Yes.
He literally couldn't smile. And
mm-hmm.
so once I learned that, people explained it, I didn't take it personally, and I felt bad that I wasn't sure if I was smiling enough back at him.
Right, right.
And so then I made sure I was smiling at him, because it's not his fault. He can't smile. Like, he wasn't meaning. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a common thing that comes up in my conversations with people with Parkinson's and care partners, is we talk about the need to really be direct with asking people how they're feeling, because when people have been in relationships for decades and decades, you feel like you know someone like the back of your hand, and then all of a sudden their body language changes, and you feel like they're a different person, when they're like, I'm having a great day. And they're like, it doesn't look like you're having a great day.
We're so used to picking up the facial recognitions. I mean, if my husband looks at me like the slightly wrong way, I'm like, what did I do? What's wrong? He's like, mm-hmm. what? And I'm like, so
exactly.
When all of a sudden you can't express, is there some connection also, I'm thinking about other folks with neuro, what do we call, like autism, mm-hmm. it's the opposite of neurotypical. We use the term that the neuro differences. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
But so folks also, right, at different forms of autism, they may say you can't read what their expressions are and vice versa.
Right,
okay.
Right.
But the most common, I think, is the tremors. You know, people think about Michael J. Fox.
Yep.
And
so another person who was diagnosed in their, you know,
he was diagnosed young, right?
Early 30s, late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. So
we're similar enough in age that I watched Michael J. Fox on TV all throughout the 80s and 90s. And that was a big shock when that came out. You know, he's a contemporary, and then he had this really intense diagnosis,
And has done amazing things for the research. So that's
amazing things. Well, and so anything else about what it is? Because you then answered the question that I didn't even realize to ask, which is what causes it. Which
we don't know. Yeah, we don't know what causes it. The things that people are looking into or we're thinking have some association are environmental toxins and chemicals, that there's some genetic component, but we're still figuring that out.
Well, and that's why I assumed there might be a genetic component. And then when you started mentioning different family members, I don't know. interesting. Now I am going to geek out. I'm going to geek out. I'm going to use a big word, epidemiologically.
Yeah.
That's a big word for myself here. And let's see if I say that right. I didn't realize there might be an environmental or toxin link. Mm-hmm. If so, has there been an increase in Parkinson's over the years? And then do people start pointing to environmental issues for that?
Totally. Yeah.
I guess that's a two-part question.
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about the prevalence, too, that there are over, like, 10 million people in the world diagnosed with Parkinson's. It's the second leading neurodegenerative disease behind Alzheimer's, which means there's, like, a million people in the United States diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And there has definitely been an increase of people with diagnoses. And I think one of the things that I've seen is people who've been, like, exposed to Agent Orange, that's been associated with Parkinson's disease diagnoses and things like that. So people are looking into those toxins.
So this is going to sound fascinating, but that's the third reference to Agent Orange today.
Oh, my goodness.
In the last few hours. I spent the morning with just a beautiful, wonderful group of about 75 veterans in a tiny or small Hamlet, North Carolina, about an hour and a half away. I was invited to come and talk to a group, and I was hearing some of the gentlemen at our table talk about, and most of the folks there were 70s and 80s, talking about having cancers and issues that they talked about being related to Agent Orange.
Yeah.
And then I get in the car to drive home or drive here, and I was listening to a podcast, and Parker Posey, the wonderful actress, was talking about her father had Parkinson's disease. Oh, no. Nope. Never mind. He had a different issue. He had a different issue, I just realized, but it was connected to Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, all right, so go on. But the fact that this is the third time, how random. I would hear that reference to the toxin. And so I guess we're still realizing what are the implications of that.
Still realizing it.
All right.
Still realizing it.
So lots of people have it. And so, I'll just let that one go. But I do wonder if there's going to be a lot more. I think we can say that about a number of issues.
Yes.
Especially the neurological issues.
Yeah. And I think a common thing that I talk with people about is people I sometimes when people are newly diagnosed say, like, what could I have done to prevent this? And I don't think that there, like, is anything that we would have known about or said what people could do to prevent this. This is a disease caused, that's coming with age. And so there's nothing, there's no blame that's placed.
And it's funny, I'm looking at our questions, and the cause and how to prevent it was not one of our questions either.
No.
So I'm so glad that's coming up because, all right, this is going to sound... It's been a day. This is going to sound funny and weird, but I'm not glad that there's no way to prevent it. That sounds wrong.
Yeah,
there are so many issues that are preventable, especially around in even Alzheimer's disease, about our behavioral issues about. And so I know I need to eat better. I know I need, if Alicia was here, she'd be on me. Heather, you need to exercise more. You need to eat better. And so I don't know if there's a link clearly to that in Parkinson's, but it is. We're constantly getting bombarded, especially those of us in the public health field and the medical field, about, like, do this to prevent. So it is interesting. One of the questions I know we want to talk about is, while we're not sure how to prevent it, how is it diagnosed?
Yeah, so the most common way that Parkinson's disease is diagnosed is by a specialized neurologist called a movement disorder specialist. This is a person with, 2 years post their neurology experience dedicated to movement disorders and things like Parkinson's disease. So they have the specialized knowledge for what it looks like and how to treat it and how to manage the symptoms. And there are general neurologists as well who can diagnose Parkinson's disease, but being able to be connected with a movement disorder specialist is really good.
Is it diagnosed through things like a blood marker, or is it through behavioral things? And I'm asking that because there's another question that's going to come after that.
Oh, yeah. So it's mostly the most accurate diagnosis is through a clinical exam. that the movement disorder specialist does. There are tests that are coming out now test for one called a DAT scan that tests if your dopamine level is normal or abnormal.
Interesting.
And there is another test that tests for alpha-synuclein, which is a protein in the brain. That
you say these words so beautifully. I mean, we're hearing so many words I've never heard, but an
alpha-synuclein, which is a protein like malformation that comes with Parkinson's disease. Those tests aren't able to make a clinical diagnosis. They just kind of provide neurologists, clinicians, more information with what a diagnosis might be.
Okay. The reason why I was asking that, because I was curious, and I have had folks in my life, in my family, and in other the people that have little tremors,
mm-hmm,
that you know,
mm-hmm,
you see hand movements, and so that the immediate thought that I had was like, do they have Parkinson's?
Mm-hmm.
And then follow up doctors and visits all say they don't. There's multiple people, so apparently people can have. I mean, I'm actually a little tremory, but I don't have like a constant, and so. It doesn't mean if you have a tremor, you have Parkinson's, even though that's one of
Yes. So if we want to talk about misconceptions.
You know what? Oh, my gosh. That was literally, I did not mean to do a segue, but that actually is literally the next question we were going to discuss.
You did a lovely segue.
There we go.
So if you want to talk about misconceptions,
yes.
That not everybody with Parkinson's disease has a tremor, even though that's what people most commonly associate with Parkinson's disease.
So not everyone who has tremors has Parkinson's disease, and not everyone with Parkinson's disease has tremors.
Right.
Go on.
Yes. And so I think that a common misconception is that Parkinson's disease is just about your movement and just about your motor symptoms, but there are a ton of non-motor symptoms that come with Parkinson's disease as well. And many of those symptoms tend to be more overwhelming and impact your daily life more. And those can be like difficulty with sleep, having vivid dreams, constipation, changes in your speech and swallowing, your mood and mental health. There are changes that are happening in your brain chemistry that can cause you to have more mental health issues than you maybe did in the past.
Well, and in my work with older adults and with family members of older adults who are going through complexity, I hear a lot about the dementia connection with Parkinson's disease. Can you talk a little bit about that, either as a truth or a misconception? But I see that and I hear that a lot.
Yeah. So another common phrase in the Parkinson's community is if you've met one person with Parkinson's, you've met one person with Parkinson's disease.
I hear that in
right?
the Alzheimer's.
You
too.
Hear it in the Alzheimer's.
And we hear it in, you know what? I think we hear it in a lot of neurological. You hear it with autism too. It is interesting.
Which,
in a lot of issues,
which can be a comforting or really frustrating phrase, depending on you know your view of it. But to say that. Like I just described, there is a whole menu of symptoms that could come with Parkinson's disease. But in your particular situation, in your particular case, you are not going to get everything that's on the menu.
Yes.
You're just going to get the specific things that are specific to you and your experience. And so
it's not a good menu. It's not like a menu you can order from and say, I try to do that all the time when I think about what are going to be my issues. I'm like, I want that kind of dementia and not that kind of dementia because I'm sure I'll have something. But
right. And unfortunately, we don't get to choose. And so for some people, cognition can be one of the more challenging symptoms. And for those people with cognition issues that happen maybe earlier on, you can then say, well, that's probably something that's going to continue to decline.
Mm-hmm.
But for others, cognition is not something that's really on their radar at all. And maybe they're
it's
not
just
going
physical.
To. They're just dealing with the tremor. The tremor is the thing that's most frustrating for them at that time.
Interesting.
So it kind of depends.
Because I'm now enjoying the misconception. Misconceptions. Because we want to be educational. What are people thinking that they, like, we want to fix that. Like, don't think this.
A common thing that comes up sometimes in support groups that I've been around, what people with Parkinson's want other people to know.
Yes.
Is
much better said than...
is that... that I commonly hear people say, people are always coming up to me telling me, you look so good, like you're doing so well. And it takes them a lot of effort and a lot of effort to be showing up and to be doing well. And so just because someone presents in a certain way doesn't mean that it's not, you know, taking so much behind that to actually be there. And they're not feeling as well as they look.
You know,
right?
We could have a whole show on that. That I'm pausing there because that's, as Alicia will say on her show, you know, moment, pause, moment or something like that. Because here you want to, when you're struggling, you want to look good. It makes you feel better. But then when you look good and other people say, what do you mean you're so sick? You look great. And it feels invalidating or like kind of not respecting their feelings. But yet, and I'm sure their friends are like, I was trying to be helpful and supportive.
Yes.
Or a good friend of mine's child is going through someone in their 20s is going through a really hard time. And I was like, no, but they look so happy or whatever. And
right.
She's like, But she's not. And it almost like it made her feel like, I'm not making this up. Like,
yes.
These are real things going on.
Exactly.
And so basically, it's hard to be a good friend sometimes.
Yeah.
We don't know what to say. And
you don't know what to say. And I think that, you know, just to say that, you know, no one can be a mind reader either. Sometimes you just have to directly kind of ask and say, well, what is going on? How are you feeling? And give them the space to share it.
I got that. Yeah,
yeah.
I get it. So what are the other things that folks with Parkinson's wish other people knew?
I think that especially when it comes to the communication, that, including people in the conversation. I think sometimes our communication goes so fast these days, and we're very quick to jump topic to topic that it can be hard for people with Parkinson's to really jump into the conversation because, again, everything about Parkinson's is slow. And so we really need to pause. I like how we just paused there. You know, we really need to pause.
Maggie.
And allow people to share a little bit more.
Okay, Maggie and I have only known each other a little bit. Can we be best friends? Like, you're wonderful. And we were already talking about something else right before the show. I think we were talking about she answers things concisely. Hi, Rocco. Rocco just came to visit, and I answer things really, really wordy. And I'm like, together we would make.
Totally.
And I would need some good counseling because I'm moving too fast. I'm talking too fast. I'm jumping around from issue to issue, especially like crazy days for me today where I'm still trying to center myself.
Yeah.
You would need to center me before I go.
Right.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of times people are trying to fill the silence and they're trying to be helpful and they're trying to say, oh, I know what you're trying to say, when really they just need time to share it with you. And they get used to people ignoring them in conversations. So then when they are asked a direct question, it could be like, oh, and it might take even a little bit longer. It might have a little bit of a freezing to be able to join in.
We had a show last June we are in the right month. I just realized, in a way, while we're not in Parkinson's Awareness Month, we are in Brain Health Awareness
Brain Health Month.
So we totally planned this.
We got it.
Because I was like, wait, last June we had a series of shows all on different areas around neurology, and we had a show on stroke and aphasia. We had a gentleman in, and we were asking the question, is it insulting when people try to help you finish your words, or do you like that? And it's sort of like, so people will have different ideas about that. So it is helpful to know what would be helpful and where we're getting in the way. And I know generally for me that means being quiet, especially, or taking that 7-second pause. You know, I remember learning about with dementia when you ask a question with someone.
Wait.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
Waiting. We're getting our picture taken. This is very fun. The fantastic, very famous Maggie. That's the famous Rocco. He is
Thank
the host
Rocco.
Of the music show, Music Hall. I always say it wrong. Music Hall. Rocco is my mentor, and he is my just my idol. He's had over 1,000 shows. Rocco, he's not in front of a mic. Rocco, this is my 82nd show. I'm coming up on you. I only have 1,000 more to go.
She's heading for you.
We're talking about Parkinson's. Feel free if you want to talk about it with us.
I'll send you the picture.
Oh, he's so sweet. Thanks. Okay. He's taking pictures of us. So sweet. So in terms of misconceptions, folks want to be a part of the conversation. Mm-hmm, and so slowness does not mean lack of interest or lack of engagement or lack of cognitive following. It just means slow down.
Need some time. Need some space. Yeah.
That's helpful. I am thinking, before we get off the topic of misconceptions, so in terms of folks that we've seen out in the mainstream, so Michael J. Fox is definitely someone who, while I don't know what the cognitive issues are, I know that he has shared there's been some mental health issues from it, but it seems more physical. And then there were other folks that people thought might be Parkinson's disease. It ended up being like Robin Williams, where it was more of a Lewy bodies. Are there other famous folks out there that people say, ah, that's what I think of? Or is it just kind of classic Michael J. Fox?
No, there are a lot. Of course, my brain goes blank in this moment, but there are a lot of people who have Parkinson's disease. But like, again, I don't know that there is anyone that is like, you know, Michael J. Fox probably is the poster person for Parkinson's, or at least the most common, commonly known person with Parkinson's. But again, like I'll say this, when it comes to misconceptions, many people perceive Parkinson's as being a disease that older white male people get, when Parkinson's doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, I think I did not realize, just because I knew, you know what? Actually, a lot of people I didn't know, they're older white men. That is true. But I know that I also know some women. Okay, go on. Yeah. I did not catch that.
Yeah. So I think that some people have this idea, or at least like the picture, I think it's even in textbooks, is just like a man kind of stooped over with a cane or a walker. And it really doesn't discriminate. Parkinson's, I think, is like 50% women, 50% men, and does not discriminate based on race or ethnicity. It can happen to anybody. So again, going back to, we're still figuring out the cause.
Well, let's then turn.
Yeah.
Let's turn to treatment then. So how are folks treated after they're diagnosed? And when do people generally get diagnosed? I was looking at a condition the other day, and some conditions, you know, come up in their 20s and 30s. Other conditions, like a lot of like dementias, might kick in. It can happen in the 40s and 50s. You generally see it more in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Yeah. When do folks start getting diagnosed with Parkinson's?
Usually in their 60s and 70s.
Which is why Michael J. Fox was so interesting, because he was in his 30s, right?
So that Michael J. Fox case, and for people younger than 60, we usually call that young onset Parkinson's disease.
Okay. Just like early onset Alzheimer's.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But that was really young. Even early onset Alzheimer's means 50s. Whereas...
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it's a slow progressing disease. So people who are diagnosed with Parkinson's, the prognosis is usually, you know, a decade, you know, can be decades, as we've seen.
So people, if it's progressing slowly... Yes. It might take a while to even catch. Okay.
Yeah. So it really just depends on how, and then we'll talk about treatment, how we manage symptoms. And so that is what your neurologist does when you come to see them, is they say, okay, you're having difficulty with your motor symptoms. Well, we're going to use medication for that to help with make your movements more fluid, make you less stiff, help with your balance. And then they also address all of those things that are related to the non-motor symptoms. Try to improve sleep, try to improve speech. And we do that best with an interdisciplinary team.
Oh, let's go back to that medical social worker you are.
Yeah. And so, like, the first line of defense disciplines that we rely on within Parkinson's disease are our physical therapists who, you know, provide exercises, occupational therapists, and speech therapists. Those are the disciplines that we rely on, because the number one intervention within Parkinson's disease to slow the progression of the disease is exercise.
I knew we were, and I actually knew that because I wanted to, because I'm seeing so much creativity, the boxing classes.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of exercise classes. It's funny, I actually see and hear about Parkinson's so much because I spend so much time looking at different senior living communities around the area, and you often see specialized exercise classes, which I actually want to get back to with that. But so it really, is it like, because it just helps, I'm moving around, it just helps kind of keep things moving and lubricated, loose.
So the aerobic intensity that you do in your exercise is what provides dopamine to your brain. Yeah. So, you know, just like when any of us exercise, you kind of get that exercise high, that dopamine release.
And I think I got to study hormones more, because I think of that as an endorphin release. But is there, okay, note to self, I have to study dopamine, serotonin, endorphins.
Estrogen. Figure it all out.
I'm a middle-aged woman. So like, where does all these hormones come in and make sense?
How do they intersect? So that's why exercise is super important, and keeping an active lifestyle. That is the number one thing that we share with people, is keep active. And I tell people, you know, yes, exercise is number one, but keeping active in your social lives is a very close second.
We push that here on the Aging Well Together show. When our very first show came out, and then it was really pushed. I remember we talked about it a lot on our second show, May 10th, 2023. The Surgeon General had just come out with the report, which is what we've been saying for years and years, that how social isolation and lack of engagement is so dangerous physically, cognitively. And so, so staying socially active and physically active, really, really important. And I didn't want to, you made something, a quick comment before about there are medications, which I'm glad that there are medications that can help with the movement.
With the motor symptoms.
And the motor symptoms, just because there's a lot of complexity I'm seeing where there's not medication to help.
Yeah.
So especially with other neurological issues sometimes, especially some of the dementias. So, Okay, so treatment options. So we've got moving, exercise, I'm sure eating right. Someone's going to throw that in just because that's important. Anything else?
And I'll, you know, talk about some of the advanced therapies, like deep brain stimulation and focused ultrasound.
Ooh. Yes. Is that a fancy way of saying electric shock?
Focused ultrasound is a laser.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. A laser that is burned into your brain.
Okay.
That focuses on that movement area that we've been talking about.
I liked the term focused ultrasound. That sounded, I didn't love the burned in your brain part, because I was like, ooh, I like that. Because I like passive things where it sounds like a spa treatment. Like, oh, great. You just put it on. And I've had lots of other ultrasounds. Like, sure, might as well. And a family member just had a brain ultrasound. They had something kind of similar.
Yeah.
All right. So there's focused ultrasound
and deep brain stimulation. And deep brain stimulation is where they, you have brain surgery, and they place an electrode in your brain and the places that have that movement. And and when they stimulate that electrode, it reduces the tremor that you experience. So for both deep brain stimulation and focused ultrasound, these are advanced therapies that are not for everyone with Parkinson's disease.
And I'm just sitting here with my mouth open. How does one, are these in the mainstream? Are these still getting like clinically tested? Like how does someone get that? If they're like, I want that one.
Yeah, these are in the mainstream, and they specifically focus on improving the symptom of tremor.
That is interesting. Can people with tremors without Parkinson's also benefit from that?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. So it is useful.
I have to have a discussion with some family members then.
And so it's for people with tremor who their tremor is impacting their quality of life on a large scale and in everything that they do. So those are therapies that people talk about. And so I think when people are first diagnosed with Parkinson's, sometimes they can see brain surgery or, you know, lasers and be like, oh my gosh, is that in my future?
Yeah.
And it's not. It's not for everyone. It's just for the people who really experience that tremor.
Well, and going back to your social work skill set, and as you said, when people are diagnosed and then they see the future, I would think with any progressive disease, that's going to have a slow decline, but an eventual decline, there'd be a lot of social and psychosocial and emotional and especially Parkinson's, because I do, you know, it's a complicated disease. And so are people, when they're diagnosed, are they, how are they supported? Are they like, and here's therapists and here's support groups? I mean, is there a circle of support or are people struggling out there?
So at, I'll say at UNC and Duke, we are the two Parkinson's Foundation Center of Excellences within North Carolina. And that means that both of our centers have met the standards set by the Parkinson's Foundation that says that we, see many, many, many people with Parkinson's. We provide a high quality of clinical care for people with Parkinson's. And so I'm going to speak about that from our experiences in these centers.
Great.
So at UNC, as the center coordinator for the Parkinson's Foundation Center of Excellence, it's my role to kind of get connected with people who are newly diagnosed. The providers will send me referrals of people so that I can introduce myself and share about the different things that might be interesting to them, because it's not going to be the same for each person, right?
You've seen one, is right, what you're saying.
Right.
No one size fits all.
So I definitely want to tailor any conversation that I have to the specific goals and things that are coming up for those families. We try to get them connected with support group, if that's what they're interested in. I facilitate a support group. Get connected with any of the exercise resources that you were talking about, Rock Steady Boxing. There's a class called Parkinson's Wellness Recovery. Any exercise programs that will be helpful to them. And again, I like to say that exercise does not have to have a Parkinson's label for it to be helpful. It's just whatever you enjoy doing that's safe for people with balance issues.
Well, and I'm glad you said that. So one of the things I wanted to mention, an observation. So we were talking before that we went on air. I have a client who has Huntington's disease that also has a movement disorder component to it. And when I've been visiting different retirement communities, because we were looking at places for her to live, and it's what's great is, let me first applaud, is that a number of communities have specialized exercise programs for people with Parkinson's. Love it, love it, love it. And then I went to a community, and because we were looking for that for her, even though she doesn't have Parkinson's disease, but because she has tremors and involuntary movements, we knew exercise would be helpful. And I was so happy when I met a community, and they say, actually, we call it our movement. They may have just called it our movement disorders class, but it was a much more inclusive term because there are other movement disorders. So I love that you are the UNC Chapel Hill's Movement Disorder Center because it's not just Parkinson's.
Right.
So I like that. So that way people, because I've seen people like, oh, well, I don't have Parkinson's, so I'm not allowed in that class. And it's like,
No.
Yeah. So I think it's important, I guess, that they don't just call it an exercise class because they want to specialize in it or provide that level of support and do that kind of modified exercises, maybe?
Well, and those Parkinson's classes, they are designed with specific exercises that have been studied to help people with Parkinson's. So maybe...
Got it.
Right? And they are also usually designed to provide that support group element of, we all here are, you know, experiencing the same, similar, because we've already said not the same.
Yes.
Similar experiences.
That's a good point. That, yeah. Let's public health geek out or medical geek out there. If these are exercises that have been proven evidence-based for this disease, but not necessarily for others.
Right.
Because this person had movement issues, like the other folks with Parkinson's were like, welcome.
Right. But that's why I say for people with Parkinson's, they shouldn't limit themselves to exercise classes that just have a Parkinson's label. They should be, you can go to, you keep up with your tennis classes, go to any kind of like aerobic fitness, water aerobic kind of classes, anything.
Keep you moving.
Yeah, just to keep you moving. And something that, I mean, the most important thing is that you enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it.
I've been waiting 54
to enjoy
years
it.
To enjoy it. Yeah, no, I found, so I like dancing, but then I get injured. And anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's good. So I'm looking at our list, and what's fun is that we've got a few minutes left, and I think we've started to finish up a lot of the things we want to talk about. But in terms of ways that the center helps and other resources that you want to make sure we all know about.
Well, you're getting an exclusive here on this.
And I didn't take it's in my bag, our red sound machine, but like drum roll please.
So we were just recently awarded a community grant by the Parkinson's Foundation to bring back a program that was happening pre-pandemic, previously called the Parkinson's Players, now called Creative Connections for Arts and Wellness for People with Parkinson's. To create a theater group for people with Parkinson's and their care partners, and incorporate acting. We're going to have actors coming in as well to kind of create a dialogue about creativity and Parkinson's and mental health wellness. There's going to be musical numbers. There's going to be movement. There's going to be improv. We're so excited. But we're going to have this rolling out this summer so that people can get involved in the fall and the spring. We'll hold two sessions. And then at the end of each session, there will be a showcase for the community to buy tickets and come see these awesome, talented performers on stage.
I'm so excited. Congratulations, Mazel Tov, about the grant. And the irony is I almost asked you about not having nothing to do with not knowing you were doing the grant, but said, hey, wasn't there a theater group years ago?
Yes.
Were you a part of it?
I was not. So that was before my time.
I was going to say, because I was the liaison in my old job.
Yes.
I was like,
yes.
Wait, have we met years ago? They called me on the phone because they were like, how can we get in the community to advertise it? And then they needed a place to do the showcase.
Well, we'll talk more.
Congratulations.
Yes, we're very excited.
Yeah, listeners, so because I've heard a lot of fun stuff about the boxing, but there was this more artistic, dramatic, theater, musical component. Oh, I'm so glad.
So we're very excited. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. Only the cool kids. Do you have to, and I remember saying, do you have to have Parkinson's to be?
Well, we're going to be inviting the community to be involved for sure.
Is it a theater group? Do you have like Theater Delta or one of the cool, like, is there a theater program that's helping with it?
Well, we literally got it last week.
Oh, okay. So. Congratulations. All right. Well, I'm a big fan.
But yeah, we're working on it. We're working on getting people involved.
Oh, that's wonderful. All right. This is good. We've got like 3 minutes left. I'll ask a last question in a second. But first, I want to make sure any of our listeners who want more information, where should they go? Who can they call if they want to understand more about Parkinson's, if they want to have a diagnosis discussion, if they need support?
So you are always welcome to reach out to me. I tell people that if you want to know about Parkinson's disease, I'm the social worker to call. I'm here to listen, here to advocate, here to support. So you can reach me at my office number, 919-843-2777.
84 here. We'll say that again. I love that you just gave your actual office number, 919-843-2777. 2477. Oh,
it's okay.
Shoot. Okay. All right. Oh, I should have just let you. So you do it one more time so that way we have
919-843-2777. 2777.
Thank you. Sorry. I was talking too much that I did it. And then is there a website? I always like to give a website if people want more.
Yes. So you can see more at UNC Neurology's Movement Disorders website.
Okay. And I will.
And all of my information is on there as well. But it's got a little more complicated.
Okay.
Address.
So what I'll do is I will link to it when we post.
Wonderful.
Marilyn, I love you. When Marilyn posts, I'll make sure that the website is added so that way people have it or can click on it. All right. So my last question, however you want to answer it, but one of the things, and I like to ask guests on different topics, and I was really thinking about this the other day when I was preparing a little bit. What gives you hope when it comes to support for people living with Parkinson's disease and their caregivers?
That's such a good question.
It was the one question you didn't ask me to ask. So I was like, I got to ask my own question there.
And there is so much hope around Parkinson's disease. The research that is happening now is just really exciting. We're getting closer to kind of figuring out these causes. You know, we were talking about the genetic studies at the very beginning. These things are happening and people are invested in them. And there is a lot of advocacy going around legislation and ensuring that people with Parkinson's disease and Parkinsonism, so we never got to talk about it, but another time.
That was a whole hour ago. Minutes ago. I was upset with Parkinsonism.
But there's been a lot of legislation about getting more support for people with Parkinson's, and that is really important. Gives me a lot of hope there as well. And the community is so vibrant and so active and so hopeful, and they give me hope every day. I love my job. I love the people that I work with. I love my team. It's just a really good group.
I can imagine. I mean, I've so enjoyed. We met each other really quickly at the UNC, at the Orange County Wellness
Health Fair.
Yeah, their Health and Wellness Fair. We got to meet each other, and I was like, "Ooh, I like you so much." And then I'm like, and you give off this wonderful calm energy, especially on a day like today where my neurological issues are all firing away. But I really thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for coming on the Aging Well Together show. Think about all the different topics that you and your colleagues are always welcome back here.
Thanks.
And for our listeners, thank you for WCOM. Always appreciate using the studio, especially on these hot days that we are in our new studio with great air conditioning. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And always Orange County Department on Aging, thank you for your support. We will be here next week and look forward to our next Aging Well Together show. Thanks.